So let's talk a little bit about myelofibrosis. You've got a couple of patients here, beginning with the 77-year-old patient. Can you talk about what happened there?
Right. So this gentleman had a classical, what we call secondary myelofibrosis. So he had long-standing polycythemia vera that he was treated with Hydrea for many years. Those patients originally obviously will need phlebotomies. They have a proliferative phase. Eventually, around 10% of patients with polycythemia vera or essential thrombocythemia would progress to myelofibrosis. In the past, we used to refer to it as the spin phase, that basically you start observing that they are like needing less and less Hydrea, less phlebotomies. They become anemic and they develop what we call now post-PV myelofibrosis. Progressive splenomegaly, constitutional symptoms, and anemia or cytopenias are the hallmark of that progression. Around 5% of those also later on could develop acute myeloid leukemia or accelerated phase myeloproliferative neoplasm. So the disease would change from the requirements of phlebotomy controlling the proliferative symptoms to transfusion dependency, anemia, or constitutional symptoms and splenomegaly. This gentleman had constitutional symptoms. He had splenomegaly. The predominant thing was fatigue. His hemoglobin was reasonable. It was around 10 grams per deciliter originally. The major thing were constitutional symptoms. He did have high-risk disease features that will predict, unfortunately, that this is a higher risk. So if he was a candidate of allogeneic stem cell transplant, we would be thinking of that. But he did have several comorbidities, including early dementia. So we started treatment with ruxolitinib for the constitutional symptoms, for the fatigue and the splenomegaly. We started with a lower dose because, again, he was borderline anemic. He did have improvement in terms of fatigue, quality of life, symptoms with the ruxolitinib. But as expected, most patients will drop their hemoglobin somewhere around 1 to 2 grams per deciliter on treatment with ruxolitinib. Typically, the nadir is at week 8, and that's when we would adjust the dose. And it's really a very individualized decision with the patients because some patients, even if they sometimes become transfusion dependent, they are reporting that they are feeling much better. Their spleen is reduced, they are functional. So we always discuss the pros and the cons of the ruxolitinib treatment, particularly for the anemia. This patient actually currently is still asymptomatic with the hemoglobin of 8 and was reporting that he's still benefiting from ruxolitinib and he would like to continue. Strategies for treatment of the anemia on ruxolitinib had not been really well explored. In the COMFORT 1 and COMFORT 2 studies, those are the original studies that led to the approval of ruxolitinib in myelofibrosis. The COMFORT 1 was done in the United States. There were no ESA use in those patients. In the European COMFORT 2 study, there were like few patients that got erythroid-stimulating agents with some responses reported. In practice, it's actually a common practice that those patients, when they drop their hemoglobin, we will add erythroid stimulating agents. I would say we do see responses in maybe 30% of the patients, either stabilizing the hemoglobin, preventing further blood transfusions, or an increase in the hemoglobin 1 to 2 grams. Theoretically, the ruxolitinib obviously inhibits the JAK-STAT pathway, which is an important part of the erythropoietin receptor signaling. So, and those patients' endogenous serum EPO level is high, but we do still see responses, partly because the inhibition is reversible. The drug has short half-life, so probably it's not inhibiting the receptor for the whole time. Other strategies, obviously, people have tried to combine those with options like danazole. There was a study presented at this ASH combining ruxolitinib with thalidomide. But still, really, anemia is very challenging, and especially in this setting. You know, when patients are symptomatic with splenomegaly constitutional symptoms, there is definitely benefit for ruxolitinib. But the downside of it is that we are going to render those patients transfusion dependent. So that's where we need agents that will handle that.